Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you, Saadi Islands, for excellent presentation, although I didn't understand French. I presume you speak many good words. Thank you for inviting me to visit Paris Institute of Advanced Studies and the European Institute for Chinese Studies. I've had a great time. I'm very delighted to speak in this magnificent venue with more than 300 years of history. Today I'm going to talk about a very timely topic, facing coronavirus in China, responses and challenges. So let's start with the first part, responses. Overall, in the beginning, the response were very, very slow. So probably you heard the story. Dr. Li Wenliang sent a message to his friends in WeChat, a social media app like WhatsApp, warning that 7 people in Huanan seafood wholesale market in Wuhan city were diagnosed with SARS. But he was reprimanded by the police for spreading rumors on January 3rd. So he sent a message in the end of December. He died on February 7th from coronavirus. So you look at his picture, also the letter he signed in the police station. So actually on December 31st, China informed WHO of several cases of aural pneumonia in Wuhan. But the life was still normal in Wuhan. The local People's Congress was held on schedule on January 12 and 17. During this period, the government didn't report any new cases. Meanwhile, a big festival, 40,000 family banquet, was held on January 18th. The Guinness Book of Records recognized this event as the most dishes on display in the world. On January 20th, the China's Health Commission sent a group of experts to investigate the new coronavirus. They concluded that the new coronavirus did spread from people to people. The official announced it on January 20th. Despite the warning, on January 21st, Hubei provincial government held an annual New Year performance. Both party secretary and the governor attended the show. So they ignored the warning. And then on 23rd, the central government announced to lock down Wuhan city. At that time, it was already too late. 5 million people already left home for the Chinese New Year. About 9 million people remained in the city. A few hours later, other cities in Hubei province were also locked down. Wuhan is the capital city of Hubei province. It's the largest city in Hubei province. So immediately, the central government sent more than 4,000 doctors and nurses to Hubei province to help fight coronavirus. So many of the doctors are from the army. They started to build 2 specialized hospitals. One is called the Thunder God Mountain, and another called the Fair God Mountain, with the meaning to fight the virus. The 2 hospitals were built in 10 days. The construction process was broadcast live online, so received millions of viewers every day. Although they claimed this is a huge achievement to build a hospital in 10 days, but if you look at the capacity, actually it's very limited. It could only take about 2,000 patients infected with coronavirus and in critical conditions. It was not big enough. So after 2 weeks, the government finally realized the more important challenge is to avoid cross-contamination among people with lightly symptoms. So since February 5th, Wuhan has built up 20 temporary isolation centers for patients with light symptoms. So you can see the photos in the stadium, in the party schools. They convert some big facilities to temporary isolation centers. These centers worked very well. They treat people also very well. People are happy because they don't show much symptoms, but that avoid this cross-contamination. During this time, we observed a big problem we called administrative downtime problem. Initially, the government emphasized all the relief effort should be go through unified central command. The receiving and allocation aid must pass through a few agencies, including Wuhan Red Cross. But think about it, Wuhan Red Cross has only 10 employees. They couldn't handle the large volume of donations. Many medical supplies piled up in the warehouse. These people couldn't locate where they are and couldn't send them to the hospitals in need. Also, a few scandals were exposed. For example, some of the donations, like the high-quality 95 mask, were given to for-profit private hospitals owned by people from Putian in Fujian province. Only a small portion, about 3,000, was sent to the public hospitals in the front line. And also the officials are overwhelmed with information. Think about the whole city was locked down. Official need with so many things, they didn't have time to sleep. So when they held the press conference, you saw the problem. They performed so badly. For example, the governor of Hubei province, Wang Xiaodong, read the scripts. She even couldn't remember the number of masks produced. He gave three numbers in a few minutes. First, he said, oh, of Xiantao city of our province could produce more than 10 billion of masks per year. And then his secretary found that the number was wrong, passed him a note. He read the note, he said, oh, sorry, I made a mistake. The mask output should be 1.8 billion. Later on, he said, oh, I made a mistake. The number should be 1.08 million of masks. Apparently, the last one was wrong. the output definitely must be much larger than 1 million. Maybe it's 1 million per day, I don't know. In another news conference, the party secretary, Jiang Chaoliang, just read scripts for a different question, previously prepared for a different question, when journalists ask him a question. His answer totally different. So people are, because this is a live product, people are outraged. So you can see these common problems. Officials are overloaded when they face a crisis. People blame their performance. I would say it's because information overload problem in such a short critical period. So in response to people's complaints on the Wuhan Red Cross, on government's performance, the central government adopted a new approach. On February 7th, the National Health Commission announced a new approach to relief that pair 16 donor provinces with the counterpart cities in Hubei province. So let them help one by one. So they delegate the resource allocation power to provinces. So they can direct talk to the recipient cities in Hubei province. So they can bypass the information problem. And some provinces, like Jiangsu province, further delegate the resource allocation power to cities within their province. So each city is helping a county in the corresponding city. So this the table for the pairwise system. The government adjusted the counterpart assistance system on February 10th because they realized some provinces like Beijing also suffer heavily from coronavirus, so they changed the matching matrix. The counterpart system is not new. It has been used in 5 out of 7 major disaster reliefs in the past 20 years. The most recent one is Wenchuan earthquake. In recent years, China's targeted poverty alleviation program, an approach that focuses poverty alleviation efforts on the household and individual level in poor regions, has adopted a similar approach. For example, Peking University is responsible for helping Midu County, Yunnan province, And Peking University further delegated the task to different schools. My school is responsible for one township, Niujie Township, in the most remote areas, Midu County. I'm the person in my school in charge of the pairwise poverty alleviation effort. So you can, the government has used this approach for many initiatives. So why the counterpart assistance program have been adopted in the disaster relief? Let me quote a paragraph from Mr. Wang Zhenyao. Now he's a professor in Beijing Normal University. During the Sichuan earthquake, he was the director general of the Department of Disaster Relief of Ministry of Civil Affairs. So he told me the stories, why he came up with the idea of counterpart assistance program. So maybe I just read his a paragraph. He said that when a catastrophe occurs, there will be an administrative downtime phenomenon. Since the traditional management system, experience and operating channels only handle daily affairs, only huge amounts of relief supply. Once huge amounts of relief supplies arrived in Chengdu, it was impossible to follow the traditional method to mobilize coordination. For example, Sichuan's Chengdu railway station, maximum receiving capacity was 300 freight cars per day. During the disaster relief period, 700 to 10,000 freight cars could be loaded and unloaded at the emergency dispatch. However, during the first week of the emergency response, the entire country took action, and all kinds of supplies from the government and the private donations were sent to the Sichuan. Everyday relief supplies were delivered in more than 2,000 freight cars, compared to 300 in normal times. So unloading and allocating the goods became a big problem. Disaster relief supplies piled up at the airport, railway stations, and other places. In the chapter, he talked about detailed story. He said his phone kept ringing. He didn't have time to sleep, to think. The president Hu Jintao called him twice, asking me when the tents will be sent to the disaster counties. He said he almost cried. He couldn't answer. In the end, he figured out he must rely on decentralized system. So this is why he came up with the counterpart 8 system. So on May 22nd, basically his idea, he came up with the counterpart 8 program, pairwise pairing 20 provinces to provide assistance to 20 severely hit disaster zones, mainly counties. So this arrangement enabled the governance from the province 8 to talk directly with the recipient district or counties in the earthquake area. The central government required the donor provinces to earmark 1% of the revenues for disaster relief for 3 years. So this time, the central government used the same approach. So they sent Sun Chunlan, the West premier, to station in Hubei as the leader of the central expansion group to coordinate the effort. And also he helped a local person, the former party secretary of Wuhan, to help her as a deputy group leader to overcome the information problem. Also the central government replaced the provincial's party secretary and Wuhan city's party secretary. So there's a leadership change. So you can see the Chinese system is an authoritarian system with regional decentralization. The central government has a lot of power, mainly on personnel appointments. Local officials' appointments are evaluated by the upper level government. But the local government also enjoy a lot of powers, in particular in the economic domain. They have power to attract investment, etc. So the one key feature of the system, in Chinese we call the zhinan xingyi. That means it's easy to implement a decision once you really should do it, but it's so difficult to find the truth. The reason is there are so many layers of the government. In China, there are 6 layers. I think about the information flow from the bottom to the top, from every layer to the up level, there's information filtering problem. Some information are filtered, distorted, some delays, So all this caused so-called the emperor's new clothes problem. The top leaders may not know the truth on the ground. As a result, they are slow in responding to what happens. So that's exactly what happened, what we observe in China. Despite the outbreak of the coronavirus in December, the central government didn't act until January 20th, more than 3 weeks later than what happened. So there's a problem of the inherent in the system. But the strength of the authoritarian system is once the decision maker made up their minds, they can act very quickly, and the actions can be implemented at the grassroots. During the process, local officials may amplify the policy goals of the upper level government because they want to show they are doing better than other peers, local governments. Sometimes they cause a lot of waste and some unintended consequences. So I did the research on the Sichuan earthquake more than 10 years ago. So after the earthquake, we visited the place and got to know the counterpart of this program. I wrote a few papers on that. So if you look at the photo, you would say this must be Australian town or French town. You can see, I took a lot of photos, but actually they are built in the disaster area. Why? One reason is because the central government earmarked 1% of revenues to help the disaster area. The government had to spend the money. Secondly, they want to show off their achievement. They want to build beautiful townhouses, hospitals, schools along the main road. So when the top leader come to inspect, you can show them the huge amount of waste in the process. On the good side is the government finished the relief and the recovery effort in 2 years. The timeline they set is 3 years. So they finish the task in 2 years because of strong competition among the donor provinces in implementing the policy. So you can see the government, even during the coronavirus, has adopted some ways to tackle the information asymmetry problem. One is by adopting the counterpart assistance program. So they then create some kind of tournament or just the competitions among officials in the donor provinces. So the central government can use disaster relief effort as an evaluation benchmark for local officials. So you can easily to see which province have performed better in helping the disaster regions. For example, Hu Jianlin, the leader in charge of the counterpart assistance program from Jiangsu province, outpost in Huangshi city of Hubei province, was appointed as a vice governor of Jiangsu after one week. Because Jiangsu had been doing very well. So you can see this, the central government used more like a war to identify capable leaders. And also, as I said earlier, the central government also sent an inspection team led by the West Premier to station in Wuhan to hold the local official accountable. So with the top leaders in Wuhan, local officials must work extremely hard to show their performance. So you can see the government has adopted some ways to escalate the relief effort. So there are a few take-out points on response. The first is because the problem inherent in our governance system, the initial response was slow. But once the central government realized the outbreak of the coronavirus, it acted very swiftly and figured out some ways, even indigenous ways, to tackle the information problem as an incentive problem. Although the counterpart assistance program looks to be very effective, it may create some waste in resource allocations, as we've shown in the previous Sichuan earthquake. Now let's move to the second part, challenges facing the small and medium enterprises. So why focus on the impact on small SMEs? Because this sector is so important. SMEs account for 19% of employment in China, contributed to 80% of export last year, produce 70% of GDPs, contributed to 60% of tax revenues. So last year, China accounted for 19% of GDP growth worldwide. We know SMEs can contribute to 70% of GDP. That means Chinese SMEs have contributed to 13% of worldwide economic growth last year. So this is why we want to understand the consequence on Chinese SMEs. After Wuhan's lockdown, people all over China were suggested taking 2 weeks of quarantine at home. All the public gatherings were canceled during the Chinese New Year holidays. And later on, the quarantine time will extend to another 2 weeks, for another 2 weeks. So normally people are supposed to go to work 1 week or 2 weeks after the Chinese New Year. So officially, February 10th was the day to resume production for most companies. So the research question is, how many SMEs actually resume production as of February 10th? So in the late January and early February, our team decided to do a survey to answer the question. Why we could do this is because we have done enterprise survey for innovation and entrepreneurship in China in the last several years. We have interviewed more than 10,000 entrepreneurs over the years. So we have the contact information of the entrepreneurs. And also we hired college students to do the survey, field survey. So we have a WeChat group for all the enumerators. Because all the students now were confined in home, entrepreneurs were quarantined in home too. So we send a notice. Within 1 hour, more than 200 students sent out, but we only need 100. This is a volunteer effort. So the students worked very hard, finished the survey, telephone interview in 5 days, and then we produce a report in the next week. So by mid-February, we'll produce 7 reports and publish in Chinese media. Also, we wrote 3 blog posts in English. So I wrote a blog, hopefully probably Financial Times, and we just sent it to Financial Times based on the research. So our survey is representative in 6 provinces. So in each provinces, we survey randomly select 16 counties. In each county, we surveyed, the sample frame is 500 entrepreneurs. So we sent students to physically try to find them and interview them. So largely, the distribution of SMEs are represented at the SIC code, standard industry classification code, at the first digit level. So the response rate is very high because entrepreneurs had the time during the time of the interview. Also college students were motivated too. So the response rate is about 15%. So it's very high for the telephone interview. So when we launched the survey, I was not very sure whether we could finish the task at a high quality, but it turned out to be very good. So we successfully interviewed 2,349 firms. In addition, we post an online questionnaire inviting people to fill, but the response rate is not very high. We only received 377 online surveys. So we can do a comparison between online surveys and all survey. Because that time also other profs were doing online surveys. So the number varied a lot. One reason we wrote a blog post to show why. One reason is the sample selection problem. When people fail online, they face more serious problems. They want to voice their concerns. So this is why there's a sample selection problem. You can compare this. So what we found is online respondent reported more problems than our ASIC sample. So blue bars is for the online sample. The ASIC sample is the red bar. You can see they all report more problems. Shortage of cash flow, more shortage of labor, more shortage of raw materials, more contract issues. And also we asked respondents some subjective questions like anxiety, fear, worry, or optimism, ranked from score from 1 to 10. So you can look at the scores. The online sample, they are more fearful, more worried, and less optimism. So in our follow-up subsequent analysis, we mainly rely on S example. So we use the online samples mainly to show our sample is more representative. So let me show a few findings. First, the impact for SME is huge. Most MCE grant to a halt. As of February 10th, the official day of resuming production, about 80% of SME didn't reopen their business. Among them, more than half say they would delay 1 month or longer. So what's the loss? You can do a very simple calculation. Because overall the business, 80% of business are shut down for at least 1 month. The Chinese GDP last year is $14 trillion. So divide by 12 months times 70% of GDP and times 80% of them being shut down. The number is $0.66 trillion, the direct loss. That is 4.6 trillion RMB. The amount is larger than the stimulus package in 2008. At that time, the Chinese central government launched a stimulus package to avoid global recession, financial crisis. This only direct loss. We didn't take into account all the indirect cost. And also we asked the entrepreneurs about the predictions on the expected revenues in 2000 compared to 2019. You can see the number is also very bad. Look at the bottom one, the 40.8% of them report they expect their revenue will drop by more than 10%. If you look at the yellow part, 10.5% report they would expect their revenue drop by 10%. If it is two, that is more than half. Expect worse performance in 2000 than 2019. In addition, 30% say they couldn't tell, it's hard to tell. So you can see the impact is huge for SMEs. And also they faced many shortages, for example, cash shortages. So one of the questions is, how long can your firm last with the current cash flow? You can see the blue part, 14% of them said they wouldn't be able to last beyond a month with the current level of cash flow. And another 36% said they couldn't last more than 3 months, between 1 and 3 months. In total, 50% of Chinese SMEs couldn't survive up to 3 months. So if the business are shut down for 3 months, half of the SMEs will go bankrupt. Similarly, the business face a lot of labor shortage because the workers are quarantined at home, they couldn't come to work. So look at over 45.5% of the entrepreneurs said in their companies, over 30% of workers couldn't come to work. So only 21% of firms said they didn't face labor shortage, mostly for the residential services sectors, for the local service. And also we have a question on firms, whether they consider laying off workers or not. 15% of them said yes. So you can see there's also an impact on employment. And also 44% of respondents said they had shortage in intermediate inputs. So when do business, they need to buy a lot of parts, raw materials. So we also asked them how do they deal with the shortage of raw materials, looking for new channels, postponing supplies, or reduce production at the top three choices. Business also need do a lot, meet the orders, meet the contracts. But because they couldn't reopen on time, they had a problem with the contract issues. 55% of them said they had contract issues. And we asked them how do they deal with the contract issues. Most of them, about 48% said they rely on self-negotiations. Another 16% hoped the government for help. There are also other challenges. For example, many businesses face declining orders, also lack of protective gears because the Chinese government required workers to wear masks in companies, but there's a shortage of masks. And thirdly, there's a logistic disruptions. We also want to highlight the impact on heterogeneous cross sectors, cross regions. Here we look at four sectors, four industries like light industry, light manufacturing industries, heavy industries, business service sector, and the residential service sector. The first panel is for the question facing shortage of raw materials. The red panel is facing decline orders. You can see different industries face different challenges. For light industries, as shown in the light bar in the left panel, the shortage of raw materials is the biggest challenge for light industries. But lack of demand is the biggest challenge for service sector, in particular for the residential service sectors like hotels, restaurants, travel agencies. Also, labor shortages are more serious in manufacturing sector than in the service sector. The reason is, in general, the manufacturers are larger in size. They hire more workers, and many workers are migrant workers. They need to travel from different provinces. So it's more difficult for the migrant workers to come. When they come, they also have to be quarantined for 2 weeks. So you can see the manufacturing sectors face a high degree of labor shortage, as shown in the red panel. If you look at the export firms and the non-export firms, you can also see a big difference. The red bar is for the export companies. In your sample, about 17% of them are export firms. You can see the big difference. They are statistically different. One is 59%, one is 34%. Why? Because export firms tend to be bigger. They hire more migrant workers. Also, they suffered more shortage from intermediate inputs. Because for the exporters, they usually are designated to use inputs from some suppliers, a few designated suppliers. Once one or two suppliers couldn't deliver their inputs on time, the production will be affected. So you can see they are more likely to be affected by the shortage of intermediate inputs. Also, they faced more contractual problems. Because foreign trade, we all know, we must sign contracts. For domestic trade, many of them only rely on oral contracts. So exporters also encountered more contract problems. The percentage is between 72% for exporters, 44% for non-exporters. Given SMEs export 80% of China's total export, the slowdown of Chinese SMEs would have a big impact on the global supply chain. So if you read Western media, almost on every day there are some reports on disruptions in global value chain. Even in the garment sector in Bangladesh, right now some of them have to stop. We thought it's so easy to produce the clothes. Why the garment factory in Bangladesh had to close doors? Because they run short of buttons or zippers. They are mostly made in China. Also, there are large regional variance in worker resumption rate. So in the question because we know where the location, we can aggregate them to the provincial level. You can see one province has a very low rate of resumption, 15% for Gansu province. We know Gansu is a very remote province, has very low coronavirus. Guizhou and Gansu are the two largest provinces. But only 15% of them resume production by February 10th. It doesn't make any sense. Why? So in our questionnaire, we had a question. We tried to figure out why. One question is they rank the most important bottlenecks. So this is on the disruption logistic as the most important operating issue. You can see Gansu and Henan ranks very high. if you look at the next figure, you know why. Because under top order of containing virus, communities all mobilize. Remember, the local official tend to amplify the order from the top. So they use whatever means to protect their village. They treat this as the most important goal, policy goal, at the expense of all other goals. So set up all of the road barriers in the, on the main road of their villages. So in rural areas, most business relate to agriculture, livestock. So if like the poultry farm cannot get the feed, cannot sell their chickens, their business will definitely be affected. So there are a lot of media reports. Let me give you an example. You can see this figure, we look at the sector, like agribusiness sector. The first bar is for the agribusiness. You can see it suffer the most from logistic disruptions. This consists with the stories reported in the media. So let me give you one story. Liu Decheng was a beekeeper of more than 20 years. He committed suicide on February 13th, about 2 weeks after the coronavirus, 3 weeks after the coronavirus broke out. Why? According to the media report, all the roads, rural roads were blocked. He couldn't travel with beehives. The bees were starving to death because all his wealth was the beehives and bees. If he missed this season, he would have lost everything. He was so depressed and committed suicide. But this also has an indirect cost because we know in China, many cash crops rely on mobile pollination services. The many people drive trucks with the beehives all over China to provide pollination services. So if these guys couldn't provide pollination services, the agriculture yield would suffer a lot. So right now I asked one of my students to do a research to analyze the negative impact. People haven't thought about the indirect cost yet. So this evidence of the indirect cost. And also firms in remote areas rely more on the formal finance. Because their business are far away, they cannot rely on the informal borrowing from the suppliers or clients as in the coastal areas. So they, if ask them what they need most from the government, they tend to say they want more credit financing. You can see in Gansu, 44% of them want credit financing. But if you look at the rich area like Shanghai, only 14%. Zhejiang only 16%. So in rich areas, there are a lot of informal finance. They rely on trade credit, borrowings from friends, relatives. So they have a better ability to cope with the shortage of working capital flow, working capital. So that means in different locations, they face different constraints. Different sectors face different constraints. For policy options, it's better to target to the local level, like the local governments, entrepreneurs to decide what are the best policies to resume production, to balance production and the containing of the coronavirus. So in conclusion, we found despite the initial slow response, the Chinese government has used various measures to achieve the goal of control the outbreak of coronavirus. So if you look at the figure on the total number of coronavirus in China and outside China, the number of total cases in China have been stabilized since the mid-February. China had largely reached the goal, but the effort has come at a very heavy cost. So more than 3,000 people died from coronavirus, including 22 healthcare workers. Definitely there will be more. There are a few of them are still in critical conditions in hospitals. So most business, 80%, ground to a halt for several weeks, mostly up to a month. So creating a big loss for the economy and also disrupting the global value chain, the global supply chain. The impact vary across sectors and regions. Therefore, we call for more policy-based policies that reflect local conditions. What's the implication? What are the implications for other countries? So one we learned from China is in the beginning of the epidemics, the government tend to overlook the problems. They think there are so many other things going on. they tend to ignore that. This is what we saw in China. So when a country, when the epidemic really strikes, SMEs likely will be hit very hard. The impact on SMEs in developing countries probably will be more grave than that in developing countries. Why? Because the share of service sector in total GDP is higher. In China, the share is 52%. I just look at the number in France, 79%. So you think about the, in France, the tourism accounts for 10% of GDP, 11% of employment. If the tourists don't come, there will be a huge impact on the tourist sector, but also other related sectors, hotel, restaurant, etc. So on a positive note, the business in China has started to begin to reopen recently. So the disruption on global supply chain will likely become smaller, but there will be a lingering effect on service trade, like tourism and studying abroad. Thank you, Mercy.